You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and joining me is Danielle Holmes, Las Vegas Operations Director for the Children's Cabinet. The organization has launched the First Five Nevada campaign and resource portal focused on kids up to 5 years of age. Danielle, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
So first of all, what exactly is the Children's Cabinet?
The Children's Cabinet is a statewide nonprofit organization serving children and families aimed at keeping children safe and families together. We provide many programs and services at no charge to youth, their families, and to early childhood providers in our community.
Nice. Okay. And then what is First Five Nevada?
Oh, well, we are excited to share firstfivenevada.org. It is a new website and eligibility portal with the goal of providing equitable access to parents and families to the programs and services for children from ages prenatal to 5 years, as well as resources and information. Also, along with the website, we have the First Five Nevada campaign to educate and create awareness that the first 5 years of a child's life are critical to his or her development, and that proper support during these years results in better outcomes in life.
Okay, what are some of the specific challenges that First Five Nevada addresses?
Well, being a parent can be really hard. And while there are a multitude of programs and services across our state to help children and their families, oftentimes parents are not aware of the programs that are available and whether they'll qualify for those programs. And this site is a new one-stop shop location where families can go to find what they need.
So what types of programs and resources are available for families to find through the website?
There are some programs that families can financially qualify for to help support needs during the first 5 years, as well as resources and information ranging from high quality early childhood education to health and safety concerns, special needs, early intervention, health and nutrition, and parenting support. So the site currently includes 30 different programs from over 60 organizations throughout the state, and we will continue to expand.
So some of the organizations are governments, nonprofits, that kind of thing?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Now you mentioned that some of them you need to financially qualify for. With some of the other ones that don't have the financial qualifications, are those programs that parents can pay for?
Most of the programs that are up on our site are free of charge. For instance, we have parenting classes that parents can look at, early intervention services, all kinds of resources and services for families.
Okay. And then does it include the services and resources that you mentioned are available from the Children's Cabinet?
Yes, so a few of the programs are managed by the Children's Cabinet, but many of them are not managed by the Children's Cabinet, and they each have their own eligibility requirements and timeframes. The wonderful thing about First Five Nevada is that it puts all of these programs, services, and resources in one place so families can find them when they need them.
Yeah, that's really cool. Now, you did mention that the Children's Cabinet runs programs, has various classes and services for parents and caregivers. What are some of the programs that the Children's Cabinet specifically has coming up?
Oh, sure. So some of the classes for the Children's Cabinet are parenting classes for parents to take to learn about their child's development, especially in the first 5 years. Also, another resource on First Five Nevada is child care assistance. And so the Children's Cabinet handles the child care subsidy program up in Reno. And then down in Las Vegas, the Las Vegas Urban League handles child care subsidy.
And that brings up a good point. You did mention that First Five Nevada focuses on the first 5 years specifically. Why is it so important to focus on those first 5 years?
The primary stages of a child's development happen during the first 5 years of life. And 90% of brain development occurs before the age of five. During this period, a child develops more rapidly than at any other time in their life, and their experiences at this age have a lasting impact on health and the ability to learn and succeed when they reach school age and beyond. And not only is quality early childhood development good for our children, it's also good for our community as a whole.
Okay. And what is Nevada's early childhood system?
Nevada's early childhood system includes all of the programs and services that young children and their families need to be healthy and grow to their fullest potential. Having a strong early childhood system allows parents to have easier access to the resources children need to thrive.
Okay, so the First Five Nevada website, those programs and resources would be under the Nevada Early Childhood System umbrella?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, now what can parents do if they're trying to use the First Five Nevada website and they run into challenges or can't find what they're looking for? What should they do?
Oh, that's a great question. We do have community navigators to help. So parents who are experiencing challenges can go to the Contact Us page on the website and submit a form to have a community navigator reach out to help. And we actually have a parent training session for first5nevada.org on May 20th at 5:30 p.m. And so if parents want to attend this session, you know, to be introduced to the website, to be shown how they can find out what programs and services they will qualify for, and to share ways they can become a parent advocate and help us improve the system, to sign up for a training session for this portal, they can go to first5nevada.org. And right when they're on the page, they can scroll all the way down to the bottom. And you'll see a heading called Top Stories. And they will see an article titled, Join Us for Parent and Partner Training Sessions. So if they click on that article, they will see the link to sign up for that class.
Okay. And if they're looking at the First Five Nevada website and they see programs that do require that financial qualification, what kinds of documents should they have with them so they're ready to submit what they need?
Oh, yeah. So they're just going to be asked a few questions, just a few initial questions that could determine eligibility, their name, their email, the ages of their children, their address, and also their annual household income.
So it sounds like almost all of the available programs are listed on first5nevada.org. Are there other additional resources that are available on the Children's Cabinet website?
Oh, yes. We have many resources listed on the Children's Cabinet website. We have resources for parents, child care providers, community partners. There's just a lot of information, even for if somebody's not a child care provider and they'd like to start up a family child care or a child care center, we have many resources on helping them start their business.
Okay. So how does someone know if they should go to childrenscabinet.org or first5nevada.org to find the resources that they need?
Oh, that's a great question. So first5nevada.org is really geared towards parents, helping support their children during their first 5 years. And so they can go on www.first5nevada.org to really look at all of the resources there. And on first5nevada.org, there are five different service areas that parents can look for. So one is child care and early education, there's health and safety, special needs and early intervention, food and nutrition, and parenting and family support. And now a parent can also visit the Children's Cabinet website to see all of the different resources there, including our parenting catalogs, and other newsletters or things that can help them also with their child's development.
Okay, perfect. So once again, firstfivenevada.org is the website to go to for First 5 Nevada. Now, this is specifically for parents of kids up to 5 years old. So it's First 5, the number 5, firstfivenevada.org. And one of the parent training sessions is coming up this Monday, May 20th at 5:30 p.m. So you could sign up for that under Top Stories. Also on firstfivenevada.org, you can find all of the various parenting resources that are available to you, provided by various different organizations, government, all kinds of programs that you might not know exist. So it's a great resource to look up those, firstfivenevada.org. And then if you're interested in some parenting guides, or if you're a caregiver, community partner, early childhood development educator, you can go to childrenscabinet.org for even more resources from Children's Cabinet, childrenscabinet.org. And we've been speaking today with Danielle Holmes. She's the Las Vegas Operations Director for the Children's Cabinet. And the Children's Cabinet is the organization behind the First 5 Nevada campaign and resource portal. And once again, firstfivenevada.org is where to go for that. Danielle, it's been great talking to you and finding out more about these new resources that you're offering to parents. This sounds like a great way for people to navigate through the various early childhood opportunities that they have, various different programs and resources. So I really appreciate you being here today. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me.
At Child Fund, hope means helping millions of children worldwide grow up healthy, educated, skilled, and safe. And that means safe at home, at school, and online. Child Fund, because we need each other.
Learn more at childfund.org.
I'm Heather Vail, and you're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Karina Leugin, attorney for the Western Region of the Federal Trade Commission, or FTC. The FTC has compiled the top scams of 2023, and Karina's here to provide practical advice on how to spot, avoid, and report scams. Karina, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
So I think everyone's heard of the FTC, but just as a high-level overview, what is the FTC?
So the Federal Trade Commission is the nation's consumer protection agency. And so we enforce federal statutes that help protect consumers. We promulgate rules that also seek to protect consumers. And we do outreach like this so that we can let people know what scammers are doing and what people can look out for.
Perfect. Okay. So what were the top scams of 2023?
So the most commonly reported scam in 2023 was imposter scams with reported losses of $2.7 billion. So these scams included people pretending to be your bank's fraud department, the government, a relative in distress, a well-known business, or a technical support expert. And the scam that people lost the most money to in 2023 was investment scams. So people reported losing $4.6 billion to investment scams, and that's more than 20% higher than in 2022. And so, for example, people reported medium losses of about $7,700 in 2023, and that was up from $5,000 just the year before.
Okay. What do the investment scams typically revolve around? Are these mostly cryptocurrency investments that people don't totally understand, or is it traditional investments?
So for sure, they can include cryptocurrency investments. So in general, the way to spot an investment scam is the scams sort of start with a promise that you can make a lot of money quickly with little or no risk, which frankly is something I think everybody would love if it was real. And so you hear this sort of investment opportunity when someone would reach out to you, often unexpectedly on social media or via text message. And the most important thing to remember is there are just no guarantees with investments. So if someone promises you big money or guarantees profits, chances are they're lying and it's a scam. Any investment comes with risk and no one can guarantee returns. And if someone says they can teach you a secret method to invest, or they say they have a proven system to make money, That's also a scam. And another red flag is someone who pressures you to act quickly on investment, or if they discourage you from taking time to do research, you know, it's a scam. It's interesting that you flag cryptocurrency because it's one of the ways that people have been reporting of losing a lot of money. Cryptocurrency has been one of the most common ways that scammers have been asking to get paid. And so last year, there were $1.4 billion reported in losses that was paid by cryptocurrency.
Okay, interesting. So that's the investment scams. Now, what are they trying to get with the imposter scams?
So imposter scams are basically people pretending to be someone they're not. So the most frequently reported scams to the FTC involve people pretending to be a person or company you know. So they might pretend to be a well-known company or a government agency or even a family member or a friend. And so these imposters are after your money or your personal information when they reach out to you by phone, email, text, or messages on social media. And again, it's similar. They say you have to act quickly and that you should try to act before you have time to stop and think. And so overall, imposter scams cost people $2.7 billion last year. So for example, business imposter scams topped the list in terms of the number of scams. And with those, people lost $752 million last year. And then another large category of imposter scams was romance scams. And people lost more than $1 billion last year. So that's more than double the losses in 2021. And so there's actually been an increase of losses that were linked between cryptocurrency investment scams that you flagged and romance scams. So, you know, I think everyone wants to find romance and wants connection. So it's interesting that there's this intersection with romance scams and then gaining your trust and then pushing you towards those cryptocurrency investments that you had flagged.
Okay. Now, if someone gets, like, let's say a text message that says, hey, it's Bank of America and we detected fraud on your account, click here to verify, and they don't have an account with Bank of America, for example, that count as an imposter scam?
Yes, exactly. And so it's really common, actually, for people to get those sort of text messages. So like you had mentioned, like a text message from Bank of America, or I think one of the things that I receive a lot personally is just a lot of like FedEx or Amazon shipments.
Yeah.
I get text messages for those. So yes, that counts as an imposter scam. So oftentimes people will click on it. Maybe it might download something onto your phone, or maybe it might ask for your personal information. And then the scammer will have your personal information if you click on the link and fill out information. So like the big advice is just please don't click on any links in an unexpected message or email. And then if you get a text like that, like let's say, so in the example that you had said, like you're not a customer of Bank of America, but let's say you were and you're like, oh, is there a problem with my account? Mm. Well, one thing you could always do is just call Bank of America directly. You know, you could find like their customer service line, or if you're, you know, like frequently go in the bank and you have a relationship with the bank, you could just call and say, hey, is there something wrong with my account? And chances are they'll say, no, I don't know what you're talking about. And that could confirm any sort of suspicions that you had that maybe this person who sent this text is an imposter.
Okay, perfect. So basically, don't click on any links. And if you're not sure, verify with the source. Now, what happens if we do unfortunately get scammed? How do we file a report?
That is a great question. So you can tell the FTC about what happened at reportfraud.ftc.gov. Again, that's reportfraud.ftc.gov. And once you tell your story on our website, you'll get advice on how to recover from the scam and how to protect yourself from fraud. And if English isn't your best language, or if you know someone who wants to report and their English skills aren't particularly strong, they can call 877-382-4357. Again, that's 877-382-4357. They could press 3 to select their preferred language, and the phone lines are open 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern Time.
Nice. Okay. And where can people go if they want to learn more about the latest scams in general and get some advice on how to spot, avoid, and report them?
So access to consumer resources are available at consumer.ftc.gov. Again, that's consumer.ftc.gov. And if you want to keep up with the latest scams, you could actually sign up for alerts at ftc.gov/consumer alerts. And you'll get messages delivered to your email box so you can know about and share information about the latest scams.
Nice. Okay. So once again, consumer.ftc.gov for more information, consumer.ftc.gov. If you'd like to sign up for consumer alerts, go to ftc.gov/consumer alerts, ftc.gov/consumer alerts, and then you'll get all the latest to your email. And if you unfortunately fall for a scam or think you have, you can report that at reportfraud.ftc.gov, reportfraud.ftc.gov, or dial 877-382-4357, 877-382-4357, and press 3 to choose your language. And we've been speaking today with Karina Leugen. She's the attorney for the Western Region of the Federal Trade Commission. And Karina, I want to thank you so much for being here today and sharing with us what the latest scams are and how to spot, avoid, and report them. So thank you for your time.
Thank you for your time. You have a great day.
So much of our lives are online today that it's hard to know if we're being scammed. Keep your online information secure with simple steps you can take today. To learn more, go to CISA at cisa.gov/secureourworld.
I'm Heather Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Dr. Monica Murray, national recognized hearing health expert and doctor of audiology with United Healthcare. Hearing loss affects about 48 million adults, including half of those 75 or older. Dr. Murray, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks so much for having me.
So why is hearing loss so prevalent?
Well, you may be surprised to know, but hearing loss is actually the third most common chronic health condition in the United States. There's about 48 million adults that have some degree of hearing loss, and it's mostly in part due to exposure to loud sounds.
Okay, so exposure to loud sounds over the course of a lifetime or all at once?
It can be both. So for some individuals, it's just that gradual exposure to loud sounds, you know, over the course of a lifetime. And then there are some instances where, you know, you could be exposed to a firework or a gunshot and that hearing loss can be instantaneous.
Okay, so keeping that in mind, how can we protect our hearing and prevent future hearing loss at any age, whether we're older or younger?
Well, the best way to protect your hearing is to avoid loud sounds whenever possible, but we know that's not always really realistic. So if you are in the presence of loud sounds, really recommend using a hearing protection at all times, whether headphones or, you know, foam inserts. But then, I don't know about you, but where I live, there's a lot of people that I always see with earbuds or headphones in. And when you're using those devices constantly, over time, it can also impact your hearing. So I would suggest following what we call the 60-60 rule when using earbuds or headphones. And that means limiting your use to 60 minutes of a time at no more than 60% of the overall volume of the device.
Huh, okay. That's some good guidelines there. Now, when we're talking about loud sounds, since half of people 75 or older suffer from hearing loss, that would make me think that they've experienced loud sounds throughout their lifetime. Like half of people experience sounds that are loud enough to damage hearing. So what are we talking about? Like, does regular traffic sounds, if we're just driving, commuting, driving on the freeway, does that count as loud sounds?
No, and really, there's also age-related hearing loss. So, you know, many of those individuals over the age of 75 really just experience presbycusis, which is known as age-related hearing loss. So, you know, sometimes it's just not avoidable. It just happens as part of the natural aging process.
Okay. And then besides, obviously, being annoying because we can't hear anymore, what sorts of additional health issues are caused by hearing loss?
Well, there's a lot of social and mental health implications for untreated hearing loss. Perhaps many of your listeners can identify a family member who maybe stops going to outings or out to dinner, or, you know, really withdraw in large group settings. And that can be really because they're not hearing and they don't want to be a burden and ask for repetition or acknowledge that they're not hearing what's said. So it's really important to treat the hearing loss so social isolation doesn't set in.
Okay. And is hearing loss reversible?
It is not. Once the damage has occurred, there is no reversing the hearing loss.
Okay. You mentioned preventing hearing loss, but if we already have hearing loss, what's the best way to treat or deal with the condition?
Yeah, so I really recommend your listeners receive a hearing test, whether from their primary care physician or some hearing healthcare professional, to establish their baseline. And then they understand if there are treatment options available. Oftentimes, hearing aids would be an option, but that shouldn't be scary. Hearing aids now have really come a long way from technology advancements, cosmetic appeal, really something to help you out in those situations.
So these days, they're almost undetectable, whereas, you know, decades ago, you could tell when someone was wearing a hearing aid.
Absolutely. It's hard to spot a hearing aid these days.
Okay. And how does that test for hearing loss happen? What's involved in the test?
It's probably go back to your mind of when you were in kindergarten, right? You listen to various tones through headphones and you indicate when you hear the beep, and that gives the hearing healthcare provider an indication of which tones and sounds you hear well and which need to be more amplified.
Okay. Yeah, I think we've all experienced that test. So pretty simple.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what is wish of a lifetime?
So Wish of a Lifetime from AARP is an excellent program. It grants life-changing wishes that celebrate older adults for their accomplishments, shares their stories, and empowers people to choose life how they live. Wish of a Lifetime has granted over 2,500 opportunities. It reconnects loved ones, fulfills lifelong dreams, commemorates service, and reignites passions.
Nice. Okay. So where can listeners go if they want to learn more, first of all, about hearing loss, how to prevent it, how to potentially treat it, and also about Wish of a Lifetime?
Okay, so for more about hearing loss and hearing aids, you can go to uhchearing.com. And more information about Wish of a Lifetime can be found at wishofalifetime.org.
Okay, perfect. So uhchearing.com is the website to go to if you want to find out more about hearing loss, the statistics, how to prevent it, how to treat it, how to get tested, uhchearing.com. And if you want to find out more about Wish of a Lifetime, that's at wishofalifetime.org, wishofalifetime.org. And we've been speaking today with Dr. Monica Murray. She's a recognized hearing health expert and doctor of audiology with United Healthcare. And Dr. Murray, I want to thank you so much for the great tips that you've provided listeners about a topic that, you know, some of us just take for granted and it's not necessarily top of mind. So I really appreciate you being here and sharing with us today.
Thanks for the opportunity. It was great chatting with you.
Hearing loss affects about 48 million adults, including 50% of people 75 years or older. Consistent exposure to loud sounds and exposure to a single loud sound can contribute to hearing loss, which if left untreated may increase the risk of health conditions such as dementia. It's important to avoid noisy places, limit the use of earbuds, and wear earplugs if exposure to loud sounds is unavoidable. Eat a healthy diet to provide your ears with nutrients. Get tested and use hearing aids if needed. This has been a message from United Healthcare Hearing, Wish of a Lifetime from AARP and this station. Learn more at wishofalifetime.com.
I'm Heather Vale, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is American Legion National Commander Daniel J. Seehafer. As Memorial Day approaches, it's important to keep in mind that suicide prevention among veterans is the top priority for the American Legion. Dan, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, Heather, it's good to be here.
So what exactly is the American Legion?
Well, we are the largest wartime veterans organization in the world, and we're excited to gather together that family of veterans and embarking upon a great mission. I talk about changing lives and saving lives, and that is to bring down that suicide high rate within our community. And I would say it's very personal, very rewarding. But when you look at the statistics out there of dealing with suicide, especially in the veteran community, it's the talk on the street as well. It goes from 17, 18 I think more of a campaign number is 22, but I have some reports that it could even be double that. We do know statistics, though, that are concrete, where we have 135,000 veterans take their lives, and that is from what we know of the Vietnam War to the present. More than all those wars of death, we have more that take their life in suicide, and that's a crisis to us. And we are an organization, and when we talk about the largest, but we have 12,000 posts really around the world, just not in the United States, but around the world. We can make a lot of difference. And that's why we're really not just promoting it, but being trained. We're taking this serious, where we want to train our members to be that listening piece. So we're going to ask those hard questions. We're going to listen, and then we're going to reach out. That's really our mission. We're serious because every life is important to us. And we want people, especially our veterans and their families, to be a part of us.
Why is suicide so common among veterans?
Well, that's a good question, Heather. I wish I had the magic wand, or we would just take one little pill and everything would be better, right? It's complex, very complex. And I think what happens is some veterans lose hope. And when they're in, they have a mission. They're supposed to do this. They get up in the morning, they do this. They have their buddy system. And when they get released, sometimes those four walls get closer and closer. I think a lot of it can happen where there is a serious PTSD issues. I think a part of it's family separation as well, loss of friends, and definitely the high stress, just dealing with their job. I mean, you know, we might have a bad day. You might have a bad day even on the radio, you know, but no problem. You know, we get back and the next day is fine. But for our military, it could be a difference between one mistake. High stress could cost life. That's stress. That's why we just want to continue to reach out and say, hey, we're here. We basically chewed the same ground, too. We know those things. But the big thing is we want to be there. We want to listen and we care.
Yeah, and speaking of that, what is the American Legion's Be the One campaign?
So that is, as I go around, we use the word campaign, and that is for us to kind of get together. So I say it's not really a campaign. It's not just a cool slogan, but really a mission. And Be the One is this. We want to be the one to save one. We know the difference between just one person just asking a question, one person showing compassion and listening can save a life. I've only been home roughly about 2.5 to 3 weeks out of my whole year as National Commander of the American Legion. So I'm on the road all the time. And I have, at every state that I have visited so far, and I'm going on my 45th state, I've been around the world already. And when I address suicide, people have come up to me and said, Commander, what you talked about, that was me. Every state, there's a case. There's an example, and I get so many people coming up and saying, thank you for doing this and making it at least being aware. And that's what we want to do. We want our members and that our whole family, we're nearly 3 million. So that's a lot of people. We have a lot of posts, but we're doing it one at a time. We want to reach out and get that message that it's okay not to be okay. We're here for you. And really what we want to do is just listen. Listen.
Okay. Now, if we have a loved one who's a veteran, or if a listener is a veteran themselves, and they want to be the one to make a difference, help stop veterans from taking their own lives, listening, as you're saying, what's the next step? If we listen to a veteran and we hear something that maybe could be a warning sign, what do we do next?
That's an awesome question, and that's part of our training. So in a case that it is a crisis, we're not a mental health expert. You know, we're not claiming to be. We don't have all the answers, but we do know the resources, and that's our next step, and that's where we reach out. So if it is a crisis, we are not afraid to dial that 988 number, and that is that suicide hotline, and we dial then one after that, which pertains then specifically to a veteran. That is something that, you know, we're not afraid. We know those things, and that's what we want to do. But sometimes it's not bad to also ask as we listen. And part of my training that I was sitting on just recently, too, is sometimes it's that circle of family and friends as well. It could be clergy. It could be somebody that they're really close to. And for me, my profession is a pastor. I'm an ordained Lutheran minister. That's my job. So this national commander, I'm on sabbatical to fulfill my election. And I think a lot of people will know that sometimes in my profession, and when I counsel, I don't even talk sometimes. It's just that people come in, they want to get something off their chest, they want to vent, and we talk through it. And sometimes I don't say a word, and people come up and say, you know, Pastor, I feel a lot better. I feel so much better. And I didn't say a word. Sometimes it's just that compassion, taking time and listening. And that's what people need to restore that hope that they're not alone. And so for us in that training, that next step is just to know those resources out there and then to be that true ally, that true friend in the veteran community. And so for more complex as well, that answer is that if there's anything that they need to know, a veteran and a veteran listening, look us up, legion.org, and then even betheone.org as well. We have a lot of resources out there and a lot of information.
Okay, that's awesome. So once again, legion.org is the website to go to for the American Legion. Now, Dan, what are some of the other things that the American Legion does that maybe people might want to get involved with?
When I first joined, I thought, you know, hey, it was just a little club on the street, you know, and it's like the American Legion is immense. I mean, we help in so many areas. This is a serious mission, you know, and when we talk about changing lives and saving lives, we have prevented suicide from happening. And it's so gratifying. But the aspect of this as well is where we plug into our communities. When you see American Legion post, it's a pillar of the community as well. There's so many things that we do with our children and youth as well, from scholarships, baseball programs, oratoricals. I mean, just with baseball, I just gave a report a few days ago, and it's like we bring onto the field 50,000 baseball athletes. I mean, this is amazing. And then even helping out with proms and bringing people to come after football games and come to the post for pizza. We do all kinds of things like that. And the big thing is Boys State and Boys Nation. And of course, we have Girls State and Girls Nation as well. And being able to go to the White House, visit the president at Boys Nation. I mean, talking about 16,000 young men and thousands of girls to be able to have that experience. In fact, President Clinton was a Boys Stater and actually sparked his political career at that program. So a lot of people don't realize all the things that we do within the American Legion.
That's fantastic. Okay, so once again, legion.org is the website to go to for the American Legion. And then if you'd like to find out more about how to be the one to help prevent veteran suicide at Memorial Day and beyond, the website for that, betheone.org, betheone.org. And of course, anyone in crisis, 988 is the National Suicide Prevention Helpline. And we've been speaking today with American Legion National Commander Daniel J. Seehafer. And Dan, thank you so much for being here and letting people know more about this very important issue and what the American Legion does. So really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Heather.
My name is Corporal Bradley Joseph Seitz.
Jerry Reed.
Kate Weber.
These are real veterans facing a real challenge.
I have PTSD.
And I have PTSD.
I have PTSD.
Post-traumatic stress disorder can happen to anyone.
I was still in a war zone in my mind.
But treatment can turn your life around.
Treatment has really saved my life.
To learn about PTSD and how treatment can help you, call your local VA medical center or visit ptsd.va.gov.
From Odyssey, in partnership with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, this is I'm Listening, Talk Away the Dark, a limited series. Today, David O'Leary hosts our intimate conversation on being there for your community and how to talk about their thoughts, emotions, and potential suicidal ideation. He is joined by the Vice President of Health, Equity, and Engagement for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, Victor Armstrong, and Mikkel Clark, a father, husband, entrepreneur, writer, and podcaster in the mental wellness space. And now, David O'Leary.
This is I'm Listening, a podcast produced in partnership with Odyssey and the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, offering real-world insight into how to have brave and caring conversations with our loved ones about mental health and suicide prevention. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, but really any month is a good month. Any time is really a good time to be having an open and an honest conversation about mental health and suicide so that we can let those who may be struggling know that they are not alone and that there is hope. Welcome to the show. I'm David O'Leary. I've been a volunteer with AFSP for about 25 years. I'm joined by Vic Armstrong, who is AFSP's Vice President for Health Equity and Engagement. Vic has worked for many, many years, first as a volunteer for AFSP, now on staff, working to, among other things, shut down the stigma that often accompanies conversations around mental health. Vic, it's good to have you with us. Also joining us is Mikkel Clark, writer, author, podcaster, author of Eyes on the Road, which is a book designed to help you accept your past, embrace the present moment, and get excited about the future. Mikkel is passionate about helping those searching for peace and creates inspirational art, in addition to hosting a very cool podcast called After You Fail, which is where he speaks powerfully about struggling, well, and has spoken about personally struggling financially, career-wise, and reaching out at that time to others. Mikkel, it's great to have you with us. Nice to see you.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
You know, when you talked, Mikkel, about being in a tough spot financially and career-wise, and I'm interested in hearing how that might have impacted your mental health, but you said being vulnerable and reaching out to someone was kind of transformational for you at the time. And it's a tough thing for many people to do, to reach out when they're in that position.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, being a man, being the quote unquote head of the household, being somebody who was raised to seek out and want to be independent and to feel powerful in certain ways, it's tough when you don't feel like you have the independence and the power and stability that you want. And so, yeah, I've experienced a number of different seasons where I have felt not like myself. I have felt not powerful. I have felt weak and inadequate. And that has been very difficult for me to navigate. And I think my natural tendency is to keep that inside and to tell myself that I'll be able to figure it out. I'll be able to make a way and to make it make sense myself, which is not always the best approach. I think that it sounds great, but there are a lot of moments when I eventually humble myself and realize that it's actually better to let somebody in to talk about what I'm experiencing and to not try to tackle both the feelings and the actual problem by myself. And so that is an ongoing thing for me.
I think it's an ongoing thing for a lot of people. I don't think you're alone there, Mikkel, at all. And Vic, I'll bring you in. There are many communities that struggle to talk about this thing that's so important to talk about, our mental health.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting too. You know, when Mikkel is talking about his situation, and when you talk about, you know, my natural tendency is to, you know, feel like I should do this, I feel like I should do that, and so much of what I think happens with us, especially as men. And as you say, David, it also plays out differently and even more so in different communities. But a lot of what we feel like is our natural instinct to want to do things. It's really where we've been socialized to believe that we're supposed to act. And so this whole notion that we're supposed to be strong and we're supposed to not show vulnerability, those are things we've been socialized to believe. And especially in Black and brown communities, I know growing up as a Black male in a rural North Carolina and being the son of a preacher, you know, there were some things that were instilled in me about this is how you are supposed to navigate life. And when we don't do those things, when we can't navigate those things and show up the way that we've been socialized to believe we're supposed to, that becomes additional baggage that we carry because we feel like we're not measuring up.
I think the therapists and the psychologists, the clinicians call it core constructs. It's a part of you. And I mean, we've touched on a little bit of it, certainly as men. It's one of the
populations, middle-aged men particularly, that show elevated risk for suicide because, well, for a variety of reasons. There's no one because, but certainly because it's difficult to talk about mental health and suicide. It's getting better. We've made steps, but there's still a long way to go.
Yeah. David, I do want to touch on something you just pointed out, because I do think sometimes, too, we think about, we talk about suicide, we think about suicide as being, you know, a disease in and of itself, when suicide really is not a disease. It's the worst possible outcome of a combination of a lot of very complex things, often including mental health challenges, but there's no one thing. So there are a lot of things that we encounter, that we endure, that we experience, some traumatic, some not traumatic, but all those things we carry with us, and we pack them down. And when we don't allow those things to breathe, and we don't allow ourselves to process those things, and we don't allow ourselves to even let go of some of those things, you know, over time, it really impacts our mental well-being. And you can find yourself being overwhelmed by a lot of smaller things, not necessarily that one big thing.
That's a great point, Vic. I know research has shown, and AFSP's position on it, is that there is no, as you noted, no single cause for suicide. In fact, it happens when a variety of things, a confluence of feelings and events, and everybody's nodding because we know this, come together and create this overwhelming feeling of despair and hopelessness. Depression can be one of the things that contributes to it. It's the most common condition associated with suicide, but there are many, many things. And oftentimes I think people want to simplify it and say, well, what happened? What was the cause or the precipitating incident or event that made this person choose suicide? And it's a little more nuanced and a little more complicated than that. I think, you know, again, AFSP's position for so long is that if you reach out to someone who is struggling, you can potentially save their life. It's really low-hanging fruit and an easy thing to do to reach out to someone who you think may be struggling to say, geez, I care about you. What's going on? Are you okay? You're not yourself. Can we talk a little bit about how that conversation may happen in each of your communities, maybe in your family growing up, Vic? That might be something that that didn't happen. It doesn't sound like that would happen in those terms anyway.
It's not something that happened then. It's something that even now, you know, we have conversations. I talk to my father, who's now 82 years old. I talk to my father and my siblings. And I even noticed that we have different, really kind of different recollections of what childhood was like, which also indicates that everyone internalizes their life journey, their life experience differently. And so that conversation can show up differently in different communities. But the overarching fact is that we first have to understand that suicide is preventable. It is a public health issue. And we do believe that the way to combat suicide is by learning the risks and the warning signs. And if we can learn those risks and warning signs, and then if we can engage people in conversation, there's a way that this works in any community. We just have to, get past the notion that that we're somehow infringing on a person's privacy by asking them if they're thinking about suicide. If you see someone that you think is struggling, we encourage you to ask them clearly, concisely, confidently if they're thinking about suicide.
Mikhail, your podcast, which I love, it's called After You Fail, because there is an after. There's always an after you fail. We all fail and we all pick ourselves up, hopefully, and learn from it. How is this landing? How's this conversation landing with you?
Vic, you were talking about not growing up always feeling like you could talk about certain things or have certain conversations. It didn't really occur to me that I should just talk to people about things that I felt until I was in my teens or maybe even a young adult. It just didn't even feel like a thing. I grew up assuming that it just made sense to hold it inside and to figure it out. And if somebody asked me specifically, I might bring it up. I still do this now sometimes. I would kind of like put a feeler out and be like, oh, you know, there's some stuff going on. And I would wait for somebody to say, well, Mikhail, what is going on? What is happening? Because I hadn't given myself permission to just say, oh, I am sad. I am depressed. I am struggling. I am broke. I feel disempowered. I hadn't given myself permission, even inside my circle of friends that I trust and love. I hadn't given myself permission to just say the thing. Right. And so that has been one of the most important journeys for me, with regards to all the different emotions and things that I feel, everything that is not It's not what I would naturally share if somebody asks, oh, how are you? It's not the entry point to a conversation, but it is an important thing to share with people that are, again, part of a certain circle of folks who have a level of intimacy with me.
Geez, I'm interested in asking both of you, how do you, just as you were speaking, Mikkel, and Vic, in our conversations too, it's how do you know you're in a safe space? The concept of like being in a safe space where you can talk about this stuff and know that you're going to be taken seriously. Because you really are making yourself vulnerable when you said, you know what, things aren't right. And I'm feeling this way and I don't know what to do with these feelings. In each of your experiences, how have you been able to determine that this is something I can bring up, that I'm safe here to do this and I'm not going to be laughed out of the room or people are going to take me seriously?
I would say I don't know that I have. I haven't known that I've been in a safe space. I have said some vulnerable things to family members and people who I thought of as friends, and they have made light of what I was experiencing, not responded in a supportive way, in a way that helped me. And I've been hurt when I have expressed things like that. And so I think for me, it's not about knowing that I'm in a safe space, but it is trust. It is a matter of me trusting myself enough to say, I'm going to make space for a conversation that I need. I'm going to assume that I'm in a safe space and allow myself to create an opportunity to receive what I might need.
You know, one thing I think too, in what Mikkel said there too, is that it's important for us to always remember that people who are hurting decide if we're safe to talk to or not. And so oftentimes there are people who may need to open up and talk about things that are going on with them, but they're not willing to do that because we haven't demonstrated to them that we are safe for them to share. So I'm always encouraging folks, and especially as I talk with folks in Black and brown spaces where we haven't had these conversations as much, I'm always encouraging people to make themselves a safe space for other folks that may be hurting. And the other thing I think is that we're learning better. And I use AFSP as an example. We're learning better about how to create safe spaces and what safe spaces in communities look like. And so that might mean that rather than trying to create a space that people recognize as safe, you pick a space that's already safe and you build on that space. Like we do a lot of work in faith-based communities because for a lot of folks, that's already a safe space. So how do we create an environment where we utilize that so that people who have already identified that safe space, because for Black people, they're much more likely to go to a pastor than a psychologist. But the final thing I would say is this. I think for me, it is also about, and Mikkel touched on this too, I have to first create safe space within myself.
Well, more of these conversations are happening. We're hoping, and it's because of conversations like this that we're having on I'm Listening. I thank you both very, very much for sharing, for being with us this morning and encouraging us all to be a little more mindful about our mental health and that for ourselves, but also for those that we care about.
Well, thank you so much. I have appreciated this conversation.
Mikkel, thanks.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. And I think it's always good to just talk with other people because I'm talking to an audience now, but this combo will help me in the future too. So thank you all as well.
Mikkel Clark is the author of Eyes on the Road and also the host of the After You Fail podcast. And Vic Armstrong joins us as AFSP's Vice President for Health Equity and Engagement. Again, if you want to find out more about the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, please go to afsp.org. There's a million ways for you to be involved. And if you're struggling or are caring for someone who is, please dial 988. To get care and help. I'm David O'Leary. This is I'm Listening from Odyssey.
To find out more about Talk Away the Dark, please visit afsp.org. That's afsp.org. And if you or someone you know is in crisis, please call or text 988. For the full show and more stories like this one, download the I'm Listening podcast on the Odyssey app or visit imlistening.org.
Today, 1 in 5 Americans experience emotional and mental health challenges, but many of us don't know how to ask for help.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, we work every day to eliminate stigma and advance mental health. Visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
I'm Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and this is your community events calendar for nonprofit initiatives and charity events around the Valley. Monday's Dark with Mark Chinook is a bi-monthly musical fundraising party at The Space, with each event raising $10,000 for a specific charity in 90 minutes. Upcoming shows include this Monday, May 20th at 8 p.m. benefiting Angels of Las Vegas, and Monday, June 3rd at 8 p.m. benefiting the Las Vegas Natural History Museum. Get tickets or find out more details at mondaysdark.com. That's mondaysdark.com. The City of Henderson, along with the Military Order of the Purple Heart Chapter 730, the Veterans Action Foundation, and the Green Valley Rotary Club, invite you to honor the sacrifices of U.S. military service members with a Memorial Day ceremony on Monday, May 27th at 9 a.m. at Cornerstone Park, 1600 Wigwam Parkway. A patriotic Field of Honor display featuring over 400 U.S. flags will also be on site over Memorial Day weekend starting on Saturday, May 25th. You can sponsor a flag in memory of a loved one who served up until the deadline, which is this Tuesday, May 21st. Get more information or sponsor a flag at cityofhenderson.com. That's cityofhenderson.com. Three Square's Bag Childhood Hunger Campaign is doubling its impact thanks to matching sponsors through May 31st. For every dollar donated, Three Square can now provide up to 6 wholesome, nutritious meals to Southern Nevada children and families in need. Find out more or make a donation at threesquare.org. That's threesquare.org. And Angels of Las Vegas is holding their third annual Angels on the Green charity golf tournament honoring National Men's Health Month on Friday, June 28th with an 8 a.m. shotgun start at Angel Park Golf Club, 100 South Rampart. There's also food, raffle prizes, an awards ceremony, and live music entertainment. Find out more or sign up to play at angelsoflv.org. That's angelsoflv.org.